volunteer-produced student and community newscast.
Now, here's your host, Marie Bernard.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, a debate by federal candidates for the upcoming election. We'll have this plus your sports and weather forecast coming up this half hour on right here on News 101. But first, we present you with a brand new addition to News 101. Monday's broadcast will now begin with an update on news in the campus community, brought to you by our largest campus newspaper, the UBC. Today, we're joined in studio by Stephanie Finley and Justin McCroy, UBC reporters, with an update on what's happening in and around our beautiful Point Grey campus.
Hello, and welcome to the UBC Front Page Headlines. I'm Justin McElroy.
And I'm Brandon Adams, filling in for Stephanie Finley. It was recently revealed that the Alma Mater Society is considering changing its name as part of the new General Communication Strategy Plan, which is meant to strengthen the bond between students and the Alma Mater Society. The main reason behind the plan, according to the AMS President Michael Duncan, is that students most of the time do not know what AMS stands for, and we want to change that because the AMS is for them, by them, and they should know this. Michael Duncan revealed that recent polls suggest 70% of students attending UBC do not know what the name of their student society stands for, which is one of the highest rates in the country.
This past Wednesday, during the first UBC Senate meeting of the fall term, the election of the Vice Chair of Senate took place. Though senior faculty member Rodri Windsor Liscombe, head of the Department of Art History, took the position, student Blake Frederick took a substantial number of votes, campaigning to fundamentally change the Senate for increased student participation and recognition. Also in the Senate meeting, Tom Paksch, Associate Vice President of Equity, gave a speech on harassment and suggested that there should be concentrated efforts made by Senate to develop the organizational capacity to deal with harassment issues. With the introduction of AMS equity officers sometime later this year, UBC is making the move to ensure a respectful workplace.
Former UBC professor and current NDP candidate Michael Byers got a boost this week in his bid to become MP for Vancouver Centre, as NDP leader Jack Layton paid a visit to downtown Vancouver to stump with Byers. Layton said that Byers has already had an influence on foreign policy in this country by charging some of the most important discussions about northern sovereignty, climate change, and the law of war. He is already building on an optimistic scenario in Canada. For his part, Liberal leader Stéphane Dion will be visiting UBC for a town hall meeting with students tomorrow afternoon. The upcoming federal election became an issue at last week's Clubs Days. The reason? Earlier this month, the UBC New Democratic Party Youth Group won a prize position in the main concourse of the sub for Clubs Days through their involvement in Shinerama fundraiser. However, the Green Party, Liberals, Conservative clubs at UBC were stuck upstairs in the sub ballroom. After some arguing on their part, the MS decided that the NDP could keep their spot, but have to cover up all faces and logos identified with the NDP.
Political parties weren't the only groups in hot water during club stays. The 1,200-member-strong Chinese Varsity Club, the largest club on campus, was officially put on probation by the AMS for releasing a controversial recruitment video earlier this month. The video, a parody of the popular Mac vs. PC ads, compared the Chinese Varsity Club to less prestigious Chinese-Canadian clubs on campus, or as the ad termed them, typical Hangar clubs. A CVC member in the ad says that they have members from all over the world, while the member of the typical Hangar club replies by saying his club has members from China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Richmond. Joining us live now in the studio is multimedia editor Dan Havis, who covered this story for us last week. So Dan, from the AMS's perspective, what was the specific issue with this video?
Their main problem with the video was that it portrayed groups at UBC being unwelcome, and they did this in a derogatory way. As you mentioned, the video portrayed students being born in Canada as being more, I guess you might say, being better than Chinese students being born in China. The AMS understands that the CVC made the video as a sort of promotional piece. It had no sort of racist undertones in its intentions, but the fact that it did offend a large number of people, for the AMS, they thought that was the most important.
All right, so the AMS has stepped in here and put the CVC on probation. But are the other Chinese clubs who initially made complaints, are they happy with this decision?
I spoke with the four groups that were responsible for filing the complaint. That was the Yours Student Association, the Chinese Students Association, the Association of Chinese Graduates, and the Chinese Collegiate Society. And as a rule, they were all fairly unsatisfied with the level of punishment. The group was put on probation, and they lost their first day of clubs days. But these groups felt that the CBC is already privileged by giving a better table location at clubs days, so they think more need to be done.
All right. And finally, you talked to a number of first and second generation Chinese-Canadian students who weren't involved with the controversy at all. You spoke to them about the video, you showed it to them, and asked for their thoughts. What did they tend to think of it?
For the most part, all the students found the video funny. They laughed when we showed it to them, but they did see the possibility that video was going to perpetuate stereotypes, which obviously isn't a good thing. And this is both Chinese students who are born in Canada as well as students who are born in China. You might say, ironically, the people who were most offended were the people who were non-Asian students. They were the ones that seemed to think that the video was in bad taste the most.
All right. Well, thanks for shedding some light on the situation for us, Dan.
No problem. Thanks.
And that's all for this week. For Brandon Adams, I'm Justin McElroy. Thanks for listening.
And thanks to Brandon Adams and Justin McElroy of the UBC for that piece. Tune in next week at 5 o'clock for more UBC campus news. Now, with a look at what's happening in local news, we're joined in studio by News 101 reporter Flora Pagan.
Liberal candidate Stéphane Dion will be speaking and answering questions at UBC in the Hebb Theatre tomorrow afternoon at 4 p.m. The public is welcome and encouraged to attend. This upcoming Thursday, September the 25th, federal candidates will be on the UBC campus debating issues critical to students in the upcoming federal election. Some of the topics include federal responsibility for post-secondary funding, student financial aid, support for childcare spaces, improving immigration accreditation policies, affordable housing and public transit infrastructure. The candidates who will be debating are Michael Byers of the NDP, Joyce Murray of the Liberals, Adrian Carr from the Green Party, and Conservative Deborah Meredith. The debates will take place at the Sub-Conversation Pit, located in the Student Union Building from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m.
It's time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Why, sometimes I'd like to take a peppermint and a switchblade and a Cadillac and throw it all in a fire.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Radio for crazy people and the elderly. Oh, yeah.
On Wednesday, September 24th, CITR and Mint Records presents Novalero with Friends. The details and the good news. Winnipeg locals Novalero have just released their third record, A Little Tradition, and now they are hitting the road to celebrate. The band shall be visiting the Bergen on September 24th for their Vancouver CD release show.
That's Novalero with the details and the good news at the Bergen, 50 Cordova Street on Wednesday, September 24th. Brought to you by Mint Records and CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hey, we're J plus J plus J, and I bet you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
The sitar.
We call it that. Do you?
You should. Unless you don't like sitars.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:13. Now, with a look at provincial and national news, we're joined in studio by News 101 reporters Sarah Ripplinger, Brad Pepink, and Flora Pagan.
Elizabeth May has demonstrated that she knows how to locomotion the environmentally friendly way. The Green Party leader has taken her campaign to the rails in traditional whistle-stop form. And about to practice what she preaches, May has opted to travel via rail car to reduce the carbon footprint of her campaign. Comparatively speaking, the average flight produces approximately 8 times as much carbon dioxide emissions per passenger mile as the average rail trip. Plus, flights also emit acid rain producing hydrocarbons, nitrogen oxides, and sulfur dioxide. not to mention the contribution of jet fuel emissions to the concentration of greenhouse gases in the upper atmosphere that contribute to global warming. May left Vancouver yesterday and is scheduled to reach her next major rendezvous in Toronto on Wednesday.
Today, incumbent Prime Minister Stephen Harper highlighted the Conservatives' plan to address rising crime rates among Canadian youth. If elected, the Conservatives would amend the Youth Criminal Justice Act. Young people aged 14 and older who were convicted of serious crimes such as manslaughter, murder, or aggravated assault would face tougher sentences and would no longer have their identities protected. The Conservative leader said the purpose of amending the act is to protect society and to make the primary goal of sentencing deterring others from violating the law. Harper pointed out that although Canada's overall crime rate has decreased in recent years, violent crime perpetrated by young offenders rose 30% between 1991 and 2006. He continued saying, "You cannot rehabilitate somebody unless you drive home to them the seriousness of every violent crimes." Bloc Québécois leader Gilles Duceppe criticized the Conservatives' plan, comparing it the crime prevention strategy of the American Republican Party, whose solution, Duceppe argued, was simply to put more people in prison.
High-profile American war dodger Jeremy Hinesman won the right to stay in Canada today. A judge refused to allow the Canadian government to deport him to the United States, where he would face prosecution for desertion. Hinesman flew to Toronto in January of 2004, deserting the 82nd Airborne Division just before he was scheduled to deploy to Iraq, as his application for conscientious objector status was rejected. Canadian courts twice rejected his refugee claim on the basis that he faces prosecution and not persecution in the U.S. However, Justice Mosley of the Federal Court of Canada ruled today that Hinesman would suffer irreparable harm if a stay in Canada was not granted. A non-binding motion passed in the House of Commons in June, calling for deserters to be allowed to stay permanently in Canada as conscientious objectors. And following today's court decision, the War Resisters Campaign called again on the Conservative government to act on the Commons motion.
According to Stats Canada, children of Asian immigrants are the most likely to get university degrees. In a recently published survey, Stats Can found that 68% of children whose parents were born in either India or China succeed in having achieved a university degree. This was compared to 28% of children of Canadian-born parents. Feng Hao, a Statistics Canada analysis, says family values of immigrants tend to emphasize education, and because of that, their children have high aspirations. The study found the education rates fell more into line with each other when certain factors were taken into account. For instance, it found kids of Canadian-born parents had a higher rate of university completion if they lived in an urban area and their own parents were highly educated.
Stock markets in Canada and the United States stumbled badly in trading today, as investors appear to have new doubts that Friday's announcement of a U.S. bailout would solve last week's financial crisis. Investors in Canada and the United States are still digesting the news that the U.S. administration and Congress still need to hammer out details of the bailout plan announced by U.S. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson. Stock buyers, however, also realized that the proposed help would pump billions of U.S. dollars into the world's financial system, a factor bound to place downward pressure on the U.S. dollar.
Genetic scientists recently claimed to explain why Labrador Retrievers, the most popular dog breed in the world, may be prone to suffering a collapse of their rear legs after exercising. The answer lies in a mutation of a gene called Dynamin-1 on the dog's 9th chromosome that controls a key chemical in the nervous system. This is very exciting for researchers because it's the first naturally occurring mutation of this gene identified in any mammal. In all, the scientists believe that an estimate of 3 to 5% of Labrador retrievers suffer from exercise-induced collapse. The syndrome, called exercise-induced collapse, was first spotted by vets in the 1990s among a group of Labradors who were undergoing training. Within 5 to 15 minutes after strenuous exercise, some of the dogs would develop a wobbly gait and a high temperature, followed by a nearly complete loss of control over their rear limbs. Most of the affected animals recovered after a rest of 30 minutes, but a few died.
It's time for another break, but when we come back, we'll update you on international news and UBC athletics. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Plague Community Services Society of BC is calling out for volunteers for the KidStart Mentoring Program. The KidStart Mentoring Program matches kids 6 years old and older with an adult mentor. This program is similar to the Big Brothers, except geared towards kids at risk, vulnerable to addiction, crime, abuse, and family crisis. At this moment, there are 243 children and youth waiting for a KidStart volunteer. To volunteer, or for more information regarding the KidStart Mentoring Program or PLEA Community Services, please visit our websites, www.plea.ca and www.kidstart.ca.
Are you a band or musician located in Vancouver or the Lower Mainland? We're now accepting entries for Shindig 2008. All styles are welcome, whether you're a solo country artist or a 10-piece punk band.
You'll need to send us a minimum 3-song demo of original material, plus your contact information. Put everything in an envelope. Mail it or drop it off before August 8th to Shindig 2008, CITR Radio, number 233/6138, Sub Boulevard, Vancouver, BC, V6T1Z1, Canada.
We also love web-based submissions, such as ones via MySpace or electronic press kits. Please email shindig.08@gmail.com.
You know, as much as I hate to brag about Shindig, I must say tonight we got a Shindig for you that is so far in, it's out of sight.
Welcome back to News 101. I'm Marie Bernard, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. With a look at what's happening in international news, here once again is Brad Pepink.
The weekend brought great change to world politics as three major world leaders either stepped down or were replaced from their posts. Thabo Mbeki, President of South Africa, Israeli President Minister Ehud Olmert, and Japanese Prime Minister Yasuo Fukada became united as departing world leaders these past few days. Thabo Mbeki, successor to Nelson Mandela's triumphant defeat of the ruling apartheid party, offered his resignation today after accepting a call by the governing African National Congress to quit as president. This marks a great shift in the face of African politics as Mbeki steps down amid corruption allegations, soon after President Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe agreed to a power-sharing deal with his rival, Morgan Tsvangira. In Israel, Prime Minister Ahmed Olmert resigned on September 21st after 33 months in office. However, he will remain as head of an interim government until a new ruling coalition is formed by the country's quarrelsome parties. Mr. Olmert stepped down amid allegations that he took envelopes stuffed with thousands of dollars in cash from a prominent Jewish-American businessman. Taro Aso was elected Monday to head Japan's ruling party and stands on the brink of becoming Prime Minister. Ousting former Prime Minister Yasuo Fukuda, Aso brings a breath of fresh air, has a reputation for being just about everything his predecessor wasn't. He's charming, charismatic, and brimming with confidence. However, his long-standing party faces crippling scandals and lacks public support. And now we bring you a piece from our friends at FSRN.
After a 62-year struggle, Filipino World War II veterans are a big step closer to achieving equal disability rights. 18,000 of these veterans are still living. Tanya Snyder has more on their struggle for equality.
Congress has approved disability benefits for Filipino soldiers who fought side by side with Americans in World War II. Amadeo Urbano is 84 years old. He joined the guerrilla army at age 18 and was incorporated into the United States Armed Forces under General MacArthur.
The Filipinos fought side by side with their American counterparts, fought under the same flag and under the command of General MacArthur. But after the war, when victory was won, we were forgotten.
Urbano is referring to the Rescission Act of 1946, which decided Filipinos would not get the same rights, privileges, and benefits as veterans from the United States or of any of the other 66 countries that fought in the U.S. Army.
They said, well, you guys are going to become an independent nation. You've got to be responsible for the Filipino soldiers that fought for us.
Eric Lachica is executive director of the American Coalition for Filipino Veterans. His father was a World War II veteran and was heartbroken not to be recognized as such.
My dad was turned away at the VA Medical Center in Los Angeles, and he was told because he was a Filipino soldier, he might have fought in the U.S. Army in World War II, but they were excluded by U.S. law.
Amadeo Urbano is battling two kinds of cancer, and with passage of this bill, he will now be eligible for medical care under the VA. Filipino veterans' children will also be entitled to the same educational assistance. A competing bill on the floor would have given a lump sum to the veterans instead of fully restoring their benefits. Its sponsor, Democrat Bob Filner of California, had admitted his disappointment that his own bill was not the most just or equitable.
This is not my first choice. This is a second choice brought about by the actions of those who opposed it and would not allow it to pass. By doing this, we will provide a small yet meaningful measure of recognition and thanks to these brave men who deserve far, far more.
Now that the first choice bill for Filipino veterans equality has passed, a vote on Filner's bill has been postponed. For FSRN, I'm Tanya Snyder in Washington.
And thanks, as always, to FSRN for making that piece available for rebroadcast. Right now, it is 5:27 p.m., and it's time for a look at what's happening in the world of UBC athletics. Here's Jeff Sargent with Monday's edition of Thunderbird Eye on Sports.
After leading for the first 54 minutes of their game against the Regina Rams Friday night, the UBC Thunderbirds watched the victory slip away as miscommunication and a time management mistake cost UBC their third straight victory. With UBC getting the ball back with 1:19 to play and the score 18-16 for Regina, quarterback Mark McVay and tailback Dave Boyd would lead a Thunderbird drive from their own 22 to the Rams' 21 to set up an apparent shot and a game-winning field goal. But then, the unthinkable. With 16 seconds left on the clock, the referee whistled in the play for what the Birds thought would be their second-to-last play of the game. But McVay was slow getting back to the huddle, and with the clock running, he would get under center with about 12 and a half seconds remaining. A quick running play or a knee by McVay following the snap of the ball would have given the Birds time to kick a field goal on the final play. Inexplicably, though, McVay would run down the clock to about 3 seconds before taking the ball and handing to Boyd as time expired. There were no penalties on the play and the game was over. An 18-16 score and no shot at victory for the Thunderbirds. Head coach Ted Govaya.
The bottom line is we should have lined up and ran the play that we had called. And then we would have kicked the field goal. We had 12.6 seconds left to get off one play and then line up, and we need to be allowed to kick the field goal at the end of the play if there's time left. So I don't know what to tell you. But obviously the guy managing the clock with 12.6 seconds left realizes just run the play and get out of there. But he's young.
And if you think the coach threw his quarterback under the bus, keep in mind McVay himself admitted afterward that he mishandled the situation.
As soon as you get a first down, the play gets blown in. As soon as they start the play clock, there was 16 seconds left, so technically we should have 12 seconds left. We could run a playoff, and then we could kick a field goal. I think it's on me. I panicked, and I thought we could run the playoff real quick, and then we could try and kick a field goal. And then the referee pulls the flag out, signals it in, and the game's over. So that was the end of it. They called it down, blew the whistle, and it's all over.
What a finish in what's been a crazy season of Canada West football. The Birds got out to an early lead as McVay found rookie standout Spencer Betts behind coverage for an 84-yard reception just under 4 minutes into the game. It was Betts' fourth play over 80 yards this season, three of which have been for touchdowns. But the first year from Surrey would leave the game at the half after taking a big hit on a punt return that left him with a mild concussion. Two Sean McIsaac field goals put UBC in front 13-0 before Rams pivot Teal Orban hooked up with receiver Jordan Sisko in the corner of the end zone. Then with the game 16-12 heading into the fourth, Regina scored two more field goals, which proved to be enough for the Rams to get their first win of the season. UBC had a chance to move into a first-place tie with crosstown rival Simon Fraser, but instead they are 2-2 and have dropped back in the extremely tight playoff race. The T-Birds have two road games up next as they head to Calgary on Saturday, followed by a trip to Saskatchewan. They then host SFU in the Shrumble Thursday, October 9th, a game we'll, of course, have right here on CITR. The UBC men's soccer team kept their undefeated season intact with a pair of wins over both Calgary and Lethbridge over the weekend. After a 2-0 shutout of the Dinos on Saturday, it took Thunderbirds co-captain Graham Smith to break the stalemate at the 63rd minute of Sunday's match to put UBC in the lead. Tyson Keem then got an insurance marker 15 minutes later as the Thunderbirds went on to win their fourth straight, notching their fifth straight shutout. On top of his winning goal, Smith received his third yellow card of the season, and he will sit out the Birds' next match. Despite the loss of one of his top defenders, head coach Mike Mosher says he's confident with the amount of depth in the backfield, as shown by the Birds' Canada West leading 2 goals against. UBC now sits alone atop the conference with 14 points, and will head to the Prairies this weekend to face both Alberta and Saskatchewan. So much for concerns over offense for the UBC women's soccer team, as the Thunderbirds scored a total of 9 goals over 2 matches on the weekend, including 7 in a shutout win over the Lethbridge Pronghorns yesterday afternoon. After a 2-0 win over the Calgary Dinos Saturday, the Birds could have expected a tougher opponent from the Horns, who sat with a 2-2-1 record going into yesterday's tilt. Caitlin Davey scored a hat-trick en route to the big win, with Jackie Dunnett and Leah Perrick splitting net-minding duties for the shutout. The Ladybirds went up 4-0 at the half, outshooting Lethbridge by an amazing 15-2 after 45 minutes of play. Chelsea Stang, Carmen Lindsay, Lisa Furutani, and Jessica Bricker each found the back of the net as well for UBC, who now sits in second place in the Canada West, 4 points back of Manitoba. Despite the weekend, which saw the Thunderbirds' shutout streak extend to 3 games, head coach Dick Mosher says his team still needs to work on its finishing. Next up for UBC is a Prairie road trip for a pair of games against Saskatchewan and Alberta. The women's field hockey team remains atop the Canada West standings after a pair of victories over the visiting Calgary Dinos. The Ladybirds dominated their Alberta visitors with an 8-0 rout Saturday. Yesterday's rematch once again saw defensive dominance from UBC, but it took 63 minutes for Victoria Pearson to score her 5th goal of the weekend, breaking the scoreless tie and putting the Thunderbirds on the board. Head coach Hash Kanji joked the team may have used up all their goals on Saturday, but he added he was happy with the overall performance of his team. Catherine McPherson added another 7 minutes later as UBC completed the series sweep and remain unbeaten in 2008. The Birds remain at home hosting their cross-water rival Victoria Vikes this weekend for a pair of matches Saturday and Sunday.
And finally, with a look at this week's weather forecast, here is Alice Wong.
Thanks, Marie. Here's your forecast for September 22 to 26. Today's the first day of fall, and it's looking relatively nice outside. However, if this week's weather is any indication of what fall will be like this year, it's going to be a mixed bag of both sunshine and rain. This fall should see near normal levels of precipitation, but temperatures will be below average for southern BC. Monday evening to the overnight, some variable clouds with a low of 11 degrees. Tuesday, high of 15, will start off with some sun, but increasing cloud cover will build in by the evening. Watch out for Wednesday, there will be an 80% chance of showers that may be heavy at times, and it will only reach a high of 12 degrees. Thursday, it will be cloudy with a 40% chance of showers and a high of 16. Friday, cloudy with some sunny breaks, high of 15. The weekend, it's not looking too great at this point, so remember to tune in on Friday for your weekend forecast. Currently, it's 15 degrees and mainly sunny at YVR. That's your weather this week, brought to you by the Storm Club of UBC. Contact us at stormubc@gmail.com for more info. For News 101, I'm Alice Huang.
That's our program for Monday, September 22nd. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Megan Turcato produced this radio program. For more news, join us on Friday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. I'm Marie Bernard. From the entire news team at CITR, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Career Fast Track, coming up next on 101.9 FM, CITR.